Welcome to Mr. Black Pasta's Bloody Basement. I'm Mr. Black. Isn't that cool?
This is my show, where we talk about God knows what.
Well, I've got my head in my heart.
Fuck you! No, fuck you! No, fuck you!
I would be dead if they both fell apart.
Oh, no.
I've got no time for my fears.
Leave me the
fuck
alone!
They fade away, but they won't disappear,
Basement Podcast.
By Mr. Black Pasta.
All right, can I get headphones?
Why do you need headphones?
I just want to look more official, I guess. I don't know.
We're not going to wear headphones, though. Him and I are just going to... All right, well, you can wear headphones. Here. How does that feel? Is that good? Do you like those?
Oh, man.
Yeah? Can you hear me?
It sounds like I'm in the podcast, but...
You're a fucking cunt.
Aye, that sounds good, aye.
Okay. Welcome to the Bloody Basement Podcast, Episode 6. I'm Mr. Black, and with me is David Kelly, an extremely well-educated science at Oxford University, a fantastic musician and wonderful all-round guy. Our second guest today, with the headphones, is Ian Gaynor, one of the best swimmers on the planet, brilliant beatboxer, and easily the best-looking guy I've ever met. He's so good-looking that I would let Mrs. B have sex with
him.
He's so good-looking that Mrs. B would have sex with him.
Oh, jeez.
Ian Gaynor is so sizzling that I'd do him.
Jesus.
Ian Gaynor, you mouth-wateringly sexy bear. What's up?
Where do I go after that, eh? I'm good, man.
Why don't you introduce our other guests? I think that would be kind of cool.
Aye. So we got David Kelly here.
Big Dave-o.
Oh, yeah, man. Aye. Fucking Dave, man. Legend. Dave's a scientist, eh?
The soundest. If you're in America listening, Ian Gaynor says Dave's the soundest. That means he's a really good guy. By the way, we're not high. No matter what you think, what you hear, or what we hear, we're definitely not high.
Definitely not high.
David.
No.
I haven't seen you in how many years?
It must be 5 years, mate.
5 years, my God. What happened? Okay, so, right, let me just introduce these guys properly. Ian Gaynor. Great guy, fantastic friend. I met a few years ago in a place called Bunkrana when I was living above a bar that I gigged in every Sunday night. And the same place where I met Dave, who was best friends with Ian's older brother, Garth.
Yeah.
I think that sums it all up quite well.
It goes back a while.
It goes back a while. I mean, you were what, 18?
When we first met?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, you're only a pup.
Yeah.
Around those days.
I'm 33, so math is terrible. I don't know what age I was then. David, we met around... I think we met the same night.
I think we did meet around the same time.
There's been a lot of living in between, huh?
Because I bumped into you... I bumped into David, who is actually a scientist at Oxford.
True fact.
The last time I saw you, you ran an open mic and looked like a surfer... And Donegal, yeah. But now...
Shit got crazy.
You're creating viruses and shit to spoil the world, aren't you?
Yeah, I think...
Let's just be honest, that's what's going down.
Yeah, I work with genetically modified viruses on a kind of weekly basis.
Oh shit, I was just joking.
Yeah, that's not even a joke. Like, it's, wow. Yeah, literally what I do every day. Like, so basically, just a little fact for people listening. So I'm a stem cell research scientist.
Jesus, that's...
Basically what we do is we recruit patients. This is going to be the most, official thing I'm going to say for this podcast. We recruit patients that have mutations we're interested in. So I work for a guy that works in neuroscience. So he's interested in Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, those types of diseases. So basically we take their skin cells or their blood cells. We infect them with a virus. The virus then transforms these cells into stem cells. And then we turn them into little miniature brain models in a dish. So we can carry out experiments and try and basically figure out where the process goes wrong in Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, and then try to find the pathways and find what drugs are going to be, going in there. So at the minute too, actually quite interesting. We're going to start some research in the coming months on the endocannabinoid system.
Oh my god, it's very, very cutting edge stuff.
You
just got here. I mean, we haven't really got a chance to properly talk.
I haven't really
been in contact as much as I showed on Facebook, and I didn't realize that you were like fucking you. Wow, that's, I mean, you're like a Jesus, really, in a way. Modern scientific Jesus. That's what you're like. That's cool. Basically, you're helping.
Like, I'm like, to be honest, like I'm a foot soldier. Like I'm kind of like the bottom of the bottom brick in the wall.
Don't say that.
No, but it's not a bad thing.
There's loads of women listening.
Oh yeah, yeah. I work for all women. would you believe it? Like, okay, so cool. Like, you know, but basically my role in the lab is that I provide the kind of like equipment and the materials that the guys design the experiments, and they come to me and we need X, Y, and Z, and I will manufacture that for them.
Jesus.
And then
I mean, that's blowing my mind, you know. It's, I mean, I suppose really, David, I look at all of us and we have all so much changed. I mean, even physically, it seems like a lifetime ago that you know, myself and you were drunk on the street in Bunkrana, yeah, meeting Ian exactly, in a beatbox battle. He won, by the way.
Yeah, fantastic
Dick.
Victory.
Dick. By the way, can we comment on how fucking good this guy looks? What the fuck happened?
Jesus Christ. Like,
have you been eating male models for the past 5 years? What the fuck, man? Look at you. You look fucking great.
Oh, man.
Fucking hell.
If I had a block of cheddar, like, I would have some shredded cheddar would right melt. Now.
You know? It would melt. It's fucking...
These are handsome fellas. Like, it's...
It's inspiring. It makes me want to fucking, you know, do something, make a change. Definitely. And you look great as well. You've lost... much weight have you lost recently?
I don't know. Like, I think I've lost a stone or two, like, but, like...
Did you give it to me? Like, was that the...
No.
I think maybe you did.
I think, to be brutally honest, it's like literally, I'm working between, like, three laboratories across the city.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, like...
And you don't drive either, do you?
No, but like, you can't even drive in Oxford, like, because it's useless. It's like you can't even get parked. But the main thing is basically, like, I'm walking like half an hour between each site, even with bus connectivity, like. So between that and just like, I've just been eating well. So simple as
that. I think that's the main, isn't it? Really dieting.
Is that dieting?
Well, over training.
You eat well, like, you know, like stay clear of fried stuff, you know, bake a chicken.
Yeah.
Bit of consistency.
Ian, you were in America for how long? I mean, you're only back. I was surprised to see you. I hadn't seen you in so long. It was great. Like, stop looking at my missus, by the way. She's not yours. But what were you doing? How long were you there, first of all? And what were you doing out there? Because it's interesting to me to see what an Irish person feels in America versus what I feel as an American living in Ireland, you know? Mm. What things did you miss, for instance, as well, you know?
Yeah. I missed, like, sounds like it's really coming from the soul, like, but it sounds cheesy. My family, man. That was it. That was the number one thing.
The biggest thing. Yeah, the biggest
definitely.
Thing.
But yeah, I loved it. I went out when I was around 19 or so. Got a swimming scholarship to a college, Widener University in Philadelphia. Went out, swam 4 years, got my business degree. And
so even Mrs. B wanted to go to school in America, you know, which I found that I didn't know that other people around the world, their dream was to go to just like university in America. No, I didn't realize. And I suppose the scary thing is it's because they watched American Pie. You know, a lot of them. It's a fair assumption, I guess. It's a fair description of some things, you know. But I thought that was really cool. So what was that like for you, being Irish from Bunkrana and going to school in America?
It's different, but it was a great experience. You know, doing athletic from the competitive side of athletics to, you know, enjoying the culture with all the people out there. We had the parties and stuff, man.
I want to know about the parties, but tell me about the athletic activities that
athletic
you did.
Athletic activities.
Because you're well athletically built. You work on that. You work hard on that. It's evident. It's not...
Yeah.
You know.
It's all...
It's just the listeners now. Like, he's a champion swimmer. Like,
yeah. You know, fucking right.
Elite,
is, yeah.
Elite athlete level. Like.
Is it true that you maybe might have beat Michael Phelps' record? Maybe not like on a record, but maybe.
Nah, I wouldn't. Nah, Michael Phelps is out there, man. He's fast, like.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
But in the terms of like country times and where we come from, you know, there's not too many like super high level swimmers, but there is.
Which is odd because it's an island, isn't it? You know, so you'd expect maybe.
There's only 5 million of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, so,
yeah.
You know, swimming, although it is popular, it's not. It's not a huge sport. Like, I'm the only person from my town that swam. Really, like starting off young, and a couple more other people started doing it. But I didn't even train in my town. Like, I used to go, have to get up at 5:30 in the morning, and my dad would bring me into to the pool. Yeah, in Derry. So I swam for City of Derry, like, for, you know, till I was about 18. Then started getting interested in the American system and college as it looked like it would be, a great experience and a great opportunity. So got to, you know, worked hard and put myself out there and got a scholarship. And when I swam, I wouldn't drink for like eight months. Like I would the odd weekend you'd trip up, but like
I remember your friends going off, like at times you just kind of
sacrifice that. But now that, you know, I've kind of taken a break from swimming, it's nice that I can have a drink with my family and back home and
find stuff. Something else that triggers your heart, like of course
I'm searching a new passion
and
now,
perhaps so. Maybe I would be correct in saying that maybe you missed home.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah. Course, what about you, Dave? Do you miss home? You've been gone for about the same amount of time, I think.
No, but actually, I'll tell home a story. Like, so, like, obviously, you know, I lived in New York for some time. Like, so
yeah, that's right. Jeez, yeah. I forgot about that. I remember every time we used to watch a movie. Couldn't watch a movie with Dave. There's two things, right? There's two things about Dave I remember, right? You're gonna bring this up, right? Because we're all older and mature now.
Right, this is
what Dave used to do. You couldn't watch a movie with Dave that had New York in it.
Why is that?
Because Dave knows every part of New York because he lived there.
Oh, yeah, right. Like, I know that street. I know where that is. I know where I know was there. I had a drink in that bar.
I slept on that bench. And number two, Dave had this, I don't know, I still haven't figured this is magical. I think it's a magical thing. Like, I think Dave has to be home by a certain time, right? Because Dave would be in the middle of a movie and he would just stand up like, I gotta go, guys, see you. Boom. And he was gone within seconds.
Right.
Like, it wasn't even 30 seconds, he was gone. You're like, whoa.
No, you see, what you have to understand, you have to understand, right? I'm the master of the Irish goodbye, like.
Oh, yes, he's good at it. When he's ready to go, he's gone.
It's known as the Irish goodbye, like. It's also, I believe, in Australia, known as the White Ninja.
The White Ninja, okay.
Yeah, it's like you disappear into the night, like. And so generally, when I've had, like, a few beverages, too many, like, a homing device, like, clicks in like I'm head, and then I have to go.
I think Jermaine's very similar to that as well. Yeah. Jermaine could be sitting here, crack's 90. For American people, the crack is fun, so the fun is at 90%.
Right?
Not quite 100. Nobody gets 100 like Rotten Tomatoes, but at this moment in time, the fun is at 90. And my best mate, Jermaine, is just like yourself. He's got that goodbye technique and he's just gone. Right,
yeah,
I'm going home. You know, English, you know, Jermaine.
Once the quote is in, like, you know, the beacon is signaled and then, like, you know, the autopilot commences in, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's an unstoppable force.
There's no changing it, yeah. So I always remember that about you. But you were talking about New York when I interrupted you there?
Yeah. So like, basically, basically different circumstances to Ian. Like, so the way I went to America was whenever I was in university. So the first year I went out to New York was 2009, and there's this program called the J1 visa program.
Oh, so you were just back when I met you in Moncrana then?
Yeah, literally came back from America.
Right? That's why you had the scarf and looked all New York.
Yeah, and all the fucking, like, you know, all the trendy fashion shit. Like, all
right.
But basically, if you're a university student in Ireland, I believe the program still exists, but I think it's getting a bit more restricted with, with what's going on at the minute. But back in the day, you just you paid some money, applied for this visa, you went to the embassy, had an interview, and as long as you didn't have a criminal background, you got to stay in the States for 6 months.
Right.
So what most people do is go over and get a summer job.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, some people went to New York, some people went to San Fran, some people went to other places. Well, so I went to New York with a bunch of mates, and it was honestly one of the best experiences of my life.
Really? Did you say you studied out there?
No, I worked bar.
Just worked the bar. Yeah, class.
Was on the break. It was on the break. You see, between
and you know, it's funny. I've never been to New York.
Yeah.
As an American, have you been to New York?
I can't believe you've never been to New York. Before.
You've been to New York? Yeah,
a couple of times.
So, like,
fuck.
That's
weird, isn't it? That I haven't.
It is weird. But
I haven't been to the Giant's Causeway, so there you go.
Been there like five times. Yeah.
Mr. Black Pastas.
Bloody Basement Podcast.
But I went out to New York, and I'd been working bar for years. So, like, I literally did the most Irish thing possible ever. I went and knocked on every bar on the side of a map of New York, map of Manhattan.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
And knocked on every bar.
It's a big map.
Within 2 days, I had a job, you see. But you have to understand, like, in New York, there's this amazing Irish community.
Yeah.
Like, New York is a city made up of communities, right? So there's every type of community you can think of. There's Hispanic community. There's, like, you know, like, black community.
It's the United States of the world, basically.
Yeah, but like, the thing that really, really, what I found was interesting was, like, it is divided nearly into, like, little counties, like, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, if you walk one block...
I think you can see it on a map, even.
Yeah, you probably can, like. Mm-hmm. But but nothing hateful. But the point of the matter is, it's like whenever you went to Irish neighborhood, right? You may as well be in Ireland. You're walking in the street. Yeah. You're walking in the street. Every bar is an Irish pub.
Meeting somebody from the town,
and there's your mate, Dad.
I literally walked down. I was there one day. I met someone from my hometown, and they offered me a job. But I think what I'm trying to get at is like whenever the Irish people go away, like we're known to go away and go away to look for a better life and do for work. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Whenever we are away, we do look after each other, and I think it's a really nice like.
It's nice. I've never had a problem
of our
with
community. Like, you know, like I was out there and like literally I've been in New York. I did 2 summers there and I've never been there for more than 3 days and didn't have a job.
Mm.
You know, the first year I worked in the Bronx. So I worked in.
Is that where you were?
Yeah, it was. Wow. It's a place called Woodlawn Avenue. So it's basically it's like honestly to all your American listeners, if you want an Irish experience and you're in New York, you go to Woodlawn, you go to Ramblin' House, you go to Rory Dolan's, you will have a damn good time. Like I'm telling you, it is like the Irish experience. There's Irish butchers there. If you want some proper Irish experience, like a proper Irish breakfast, it's all in that street. There's an order like
hashtag not an ad.
It isn't an ad, like, but I'm just saying, like, for people that want the Irish experience, like, this is where you'll get it, like, and yeah. like literally, I felt so at home there.
But shouts out Woodland Avenue, yeah?
Yeah, Woodland Avenue and Yonkers as well.
Yonkers as well.
It's kind of like peace a T, up. Like, Katona Avenue and Woodland, it runs up, and then, like, Yonkers is running across the top, but they basically run in, they're all big Irish neighborhoods.
And that's where you go if you want to have a good Irish experience in and around New York. Yeah. Ian, where were you in the States? What?
Philadelphia.
You weren't aye, far from New York, I guess. But see, I've never been to Philly either.
Aye.
Have you been to New York?
I've been in New York like twice.
What's Philly so like? I can't.
An interesting city. It's a good city. It's
cool. I can't distinguish the difference between New York and Philly because I haven't been to either one of them. So for me, I know it's weird. Two Irish guys telling me about Philadelphia and New York. It's weird for me that as an American, but what is like? What's Philly like? What's different from Philly and New York? I mean, Dave, have you been to Philly?
New York doesn't sleep though.
Obviously, okay. The one thing I'll say is like I didn't get to visit anywhere except Connecticut.
Okay,
because I was working so much, I only had really one day off a week, so I didn't really have a chance to explore anywhere else.
Philadelphia. I worked there. Worked for a year there, right in the city, Center City, at a bar called Ashton. It was a whiskey cigar bar.
Can you still smoke indoors there?
Yeah, so wow. If you have a license, so these people had a filtration system that was like top of the range, and they would just suck the smoke, like cigar smoke, right up into the ceiling. And it was an interesting place.
That's pretty cool. So people were smoking and it's just going up.
Yeah, so we had a lot of like high end like athletes and stuff would come into the bar and like hang out. It was just like that kind of place. It was like the who's who of like Philadelphia would like come in.
So I'm assuming at some point you've enjoyed America, but we all want to come home at some stage, don't we?
Definitely.
But so let's talk about some stories from home because we know each other for quite a while, and I have a couple stories to talk about.
Trip down memory lane.
Do you want to go a trip down memory lane? Let's take a trip down memory lane. Now I'm 33 years old now, but when I was 27, I did something that you both were involved in. Right? I'm assuming you remember this, yeah? You remember what you were involved in? I had a 27th birthday bash. And it was all hip-hop and R&B. Now, let's paint the picture. What's Bunkrana like?
Right, I'm just gonna like call us out as it is, right? Like, this was the first and probably the finest hip-hop and R&B party that Bunkrana has ever hosted, right?
All old school.
And it was not in the typical venue that you would perceive, which would be Liberty's nightclub. It was not. No, it was in a coffee shop called The Coffee Cup. And we had...
on a Monday night?
I'd been running an open mic there, and the owner was very kind to let us host
totally
Mr. Black's party, his hip-hop R&B party at this establishment. And just to like give you an idea, this place is a cafe and has like special licensing that you can bring your own booze and
BYOB.
Basically,
yeah. And but it's attached to a supermarket.
Exactly.
So the toilet is actually the supermarket toilets.
It is. So you have to go to go around the side of the coffee shop to go to the bathrooms.
So I mean, I was turning 27 and I hadn't had a birthday party in a while. I still haven't had one since. Actually, that was good. I enjoyed it. And I DJed this kind of old hip-hop and R&B, like, you know, from the 90s to the 2000s. You know, there was Dre, there was a lot of Eminem, there was a lot of Tupac, there was DMX, you know. But then it was like B2K as well, do you know what I mean?
R. Kelly and stuff.
Slaughterhouse, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and everybody danced and had a good time. It was great, but we all dressed up like hip-hop gangsters, do you know what I mean? Real ghetto style.
Oh, there was like, there was saggy pants.
There was
bandanas. I believe I wore a vest top, a bandana, I had baggy jeans.
A vest top, like a wife beater, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I might have had a bit of bling, and I think I definitely had like a pistol in my pants as well, like, you know.
And I remember you had a white wife beater on. And you won a hat, a really shitty hat that I paid like €2 for, but you won the hat. I
appreciate that.
And that was one of the features. Let's talk about the features of the party. A really cheap budget champagne fountain I created myself.
Yep.
Two mini kegs of Heineken. You know, I'm a gangster like that. Cold food that it cooked.
I did the food at the house, remember?
Yes. I was like, oh my God.
I was slaving.
Because people actually came.
Yeah. No, the house was packed.
I couldn't believe people came. This is a Monday night in Bunkrana. And a cafe that's, you know.
And it was probably like what, like.
The supermarket was closed at this stage.
100 plus people in this cafe going nuts.
Was it 100?
Yeah, easy.
Was it? Yeah, easy. Maybe it was. Fuck. There was a video that was shot, but I never saw it.
Like, dude, there's at least 100 people there. Easy.
Oh, my God. I mean, I invited so many people because I thought no one's coming. What's the population of Bunkrana?
I think like 5,000-6,000. But that's not the town directly. I think it's like the surrounding areas as well.
Right. That's the whole area. So I was shocked. I mean, I really thought it was going to be 20 of us max. But people showed up to the bar down the
street.
People
came to your party. Everyone that turned up was full tea. R&B rap dress,
and they
like,
all
like
and
there,
they
was
had
no,
a,
there was no mucking around, like no, everyone committed,
and everybody that had a laugh. There was no bother. There was no like no, fights were, or nothing like that. Like,
we had honestly, right? Good honestly, fun. I seen two things that night. Right, I seen the first ever beatbox battle that ever happened in Bunkrana.
Featuring
right?
who?
Okay, it was featuring
G Star,
who was a regular performer at the open mic, versus our man, Ian G here, you know?
Ian Gaynor. And let me just say, right, your beatboxing skills were fucking great at the time. And I have a picture of it in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we beatbox battled first, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
And you won. I'm still sour about that, though, you know? I think we need a rematch.
Oh.
What do you think?
Oh.
Man, I haven't beatboxed.
You got headphones and everything. You got the pure bass in there.
Boys.
Can we get a little preview? Can you try something even? If it's shit, I'll cut it out.
Fuck, lad. I don't even know how to go about it, to be honest. When I haven't done it in so long.
Really? I wish I had a video of it.
Since, like, yeah.
I'll let you think about it.
The Bloody Basement Podcast.
By Mr. Black Pasta.
The way this beatbox battle happened, right? So, G-Star was the guy. Was he from Africa?
I'm pretty sure he's from Africa.
I think he was,
but I genuinely don't know where in Africa he was from.
His name's Garib. He lives in the town.
No, I know he lives in the town, but he came from Africa. I cannot remember where he's from exactly.
Well, there was an open mic that you hosted in the same place my birthday was, the Coffee Cup, and the open mic was like every Tuesday or Friday. It changed at one stage.
It was every Tuesday.
And G-Star and Ian were there, and they had a little beatbox battle, and G-Star mopped the floor with Ian Gaynor. I mean, took it.
Go, hey.
So on my birthday, the big hype revenge, was like, this rematch between G-Star and Ian Gaynor. And I couldn't have planned it. It was like an 8 mile moment, man. It really was. It was like a little 8 mile moment. G-Star drank a bit too much. But I think as well, I think you just smashed it too, though. Because you went first.
No, it was an easy contest. Like, it was like you came back with a vengeance. It was fantastic.
Did we not flip a coin and he pick you to go first?
Man,
I think we did.
Did I go first?
Yeah, because then when he went up, then he sort of choked. That was what, it was like an 8 mile moment.
Oh, you know wait, I mean? Yeah, you are right. That's yeah.
Mr. Black, though, just recap me. Is that 2011 or 2012? I think it's 2011.
I can't remember. We partied like it was 1999. Boom, mic drop.
But the reason why I'm asking this is that the first thing I said was the beatbox battle was the first time I've ever seen something like that.
Yeah, well, but you saw it in the open
on
mic.
On the
but
same night, like, I'm not going to say what parties were involved, But that was the first night I seen twerking done in real time. Like
in real time. Like
I seen twerking that night, right? Not going to say who was involved.
And twerking wasn't even a huge thing at the time.
But basically,
it was just getting there.
I seen twerking that night, and I seen a very, very happy man. Like, and he was very satisfied.
Yeah, and I think that both parties were consensual.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Oh, these God. Are the pictures
oh, God. Here we
from
go.
My 27th birthday yeah, party that people one. Haven't heard in a long time.
Oh my God, yeah. Irish Joe.
This is Irish Joe. And there Ian's side of his face is there. Yeah.
If you could see what we're seeing our listeners,
this
like,
is Irish, you, Irish Joker. Irish
Joe, like, but like, we're this is a full face of Irish Joe here.
Up close. I don't know how he got this photo, but he did manage to get it. And there's G Star. Look, and there's a picture here of Ian, me obviously putting on some kind of instrumental. Ian is about to go first in beatbox battle. Everybody's watching him. G Star's in the back, and then Ian starts killing it. And you can just see G Star licking the dryness away from his lips as he sweats.
Oh my God, he's sweating.
He's sweating. Ian, you were lethal that night. You were really,
like,
really good that
palm
night.
Sweaty, mom spaghetti, like, you know.
Yeah, it was. By the way, I got a question. I look at this picture and I wonder one thing. Why none of you told me that I was such a fucking moron for wearing a body warmer?
Man, no.
I just, gangster. To be brutally honest,
it looks like a trash bag.
I thought it was super R&B, like, and I just presumed that was, like, that's like not fucking community.
DJ
really,
Khaled or
to be
something.
To honest, like,
there.
In Bunkrana, you don't get, like, wide educated on R&B styling, so.
Yeah, I thought it was just the norm.
Together what you had.
I thought, like, it was the norm.
Look, yeah. I got Kanye glasses on, I got definitely a Drake t-shirt on. I'm wearing a fucking Drake t-shirt, right? Come on. This is not cool, in 2011.
I wear that Drake t-shirt.
It's cool now.
I thought it worked. I thought it worked. Right,
you're ahead of your time. That's what that is.
Maybe you started a trendset. Oh, hell yeah. All right.
Look.
You're on the mic. You're
fucking
barking.
DJ Khaled. Oh, so here's the story, right, about the flat. There was after the birthday party. I was staying behind. I was trying to help you clean up a little bit, but they were like, no, go. What's your, but I was gone, like, you know. And then I started walking back over. Now, this is a Monday night. I live in flats, apartments. There's people above me, to the left of me, and all that. All of them will sleep through anything. Most of them, you know, drink and make a smoke, and then they're asleep. They don't give a fuck. They would party. But the ones at the top, Emmett and Rachel, no. They both work, right? Mm-hmm. And they're great people, so you don't want to piss them off. You feel bad, like, you feel like you disappointed them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're such good people. So I was coming back from the coffee cup, which is a couple blocks away, basically, in lengthwise. And as I come up, I hear this music blasting, and it's Eminem. And I'm like, no, can't be. Because I told everybody there was no party. I told everybody there was no party. Then I get back, I get outside my flat on the street, and I can hear two stories up the music, and my window's open. Keelan has the keys. We Keelan. He's like 16, 15 maybe, right? And I'm like, Keelan, he comes to the window. I can hear loads of people in there talking and laughing. I'm like, fuck. This is like 1 or 2 in the morning on a Monday night in Bunkrana in apartments in this town center, the small town, but still town center. I'm freaking out. Like, Keelan's like, oh, what's up? Out the window. And I'm like, man, what's going on? Give me the keys. Oh, shit. We're going to be fucked. I'm rushing up the stairs after I unlock the door and come in. I'm rushing up the stairs. I'm freaking out. I get to my door, I open it. Fuck, it's packed. There's 40 people at least in my flat.
I mean, you have to understand, like, it's a tiny flat. Like,
this is a 10 person flat. Do you know what I mean? Using all the
not
rooms.
Not a 10 person, as in like 10 people room. Is enough people to be in it.
Close
encounters.
I went in and I saw Keelan. I said, what the fuck? Because he let everybody up, right? He came over before me, was letting everybody up. They're like, fuck.
Hold on. Right? I'm going on 5 years or 6 years on this, and this is how that happens.
That's how that happened. So I get up, I'm like, fuck's sake, what are you doing, man? You're going to be fucking killed. My neighbors are going to go mental. And I hear, Justin, I turn around. Emmett.
Yeah, at the party with you.
At the party, drinking with his friend. He was like, I knew it was your birthday. He's drunk, he's merry. I knew it was your birthday, so I told Rachel to stay at her mom's house tonight. That's our birthday gift to you. Gives me a hug and partied with us the whole night. It was fucking brilliant.
Salt of the earth, like,
Seamus, no. Never heard about it or nothing.
No.
I couldn't believe it.
I cannot believe it. To be brutally honest, I cannot believe it.
What a night.
There was at least 40 people crammed into your flat, right? And like, just to describe this flat, right, there's a living room. A bedroom.
And there was no money spent on this, like, was there?
No. It was just
this
like
was
a heap
it was bring your own drink
landed
mostly
back to like this spot, and like Oh my God.
I had people up from Port Stewart and on and everything. And
people trekked a long way to get there.
It was good. Mental. Derry, there was a whole bunch of people came from Derry. It's been fun. It's really strange for me to see us all at so many different points in our life now. You know, it really has been quite a reunion. Will we play a track and then take a little break while the track plays and come back to it in a minute?
Let's put a tune on, like.
What do you think about a bit of, we'll get a Derry guy on, Glenn Rossborough, actually.
Oh, Glenn, oh, definitely.
Let's get on Rossborough. With a track called Burn Blue.
Can I say one thing, though?
Yeah.
I went to see Glenn a few weeks ago at So Far Sounds in London.
Oh, really?
It was a fantastic gig, like, and I won tickets to it, and it was just really, really amazing.
This a Rossborough gig? Was this like a...
It was a Rossborough gig,
yeah. Class, man.
Oh. Yeah, but, like, obviously, I know Glenn from, like, the Intermission days and from, Wildling and his other projects.
Yeah.
But, like, it was so nice, like, to actually, like...
He's putting out some great tracks.
Oh, my God.
Fall to Earth, I think, was the last one. We featured that last week. I think that's what you call it. Fall to Earth. I think it's what you call Fall from Earth, Fall to Earth. And Burn Blue, which is a track I'm going to play now.
Burn Blue's amazing, but...
Fuck, it's great. I, you know what? I wanted that song to be in the credits of The Line. That was the original plan.
Yeah.
But there were some change ups with sort of management and stuff. Glenn was going through a few contracts and stuff like that. So I found a song by John Deere and the Heads, and I was like, oh no, Jealousy's that's what it needs.
Yeah.
This would be perfect. So we did that, and hopefully we'll use Burn Blue again sometime. But we're going to take a break. I'm Mr. Black. You're here with Ian Gaynor and David Kelly as well. This is Rossborough with Burn Blue on the Bloody Basement Podcast.
I hear the floor grumble and groan under my weight, but something more, I hear the crack, the glass is formed beneath my feet. Still I take the step, don't you know, this is all gonna fade someday. But I can feel my life slip through your fingertips until you burn. Everything. Still, we want some more after dark when we go walking among stars. I try and name them all. Don't you know? This is all gonna fade someday.
Bloody Basement Podcast. I'm Mr. Black. That was Glenn Rossborough with his original track, Burn Blue. It's a fucking fantastic song, isn't it?
Oh, it's a banger.
It's fucking great just to sit here and listen to it on our own and have a little chat. And while we were chatting about seeing people from your country in another country where you also live or are. Does that make any sense? So, Ian, what were you saying about that as well? You were saying that it's funny to be in New York as an Irish man and then meet somebody from Ireland, and there's a certain exchange within the conversation that happens. And
well, I'd be in Philly, like, but whenever you would meet an Irish person from Philadelphia, it'd be rare enough. Like, there's not a wild lot of young Irish in Philadelphia. It's more of, you know, older generations that have settled, but I feel like Philly's not, you know, a massively popular place for Irish people to go.
Is it not? See, I wouldn't know.
No, I mean, there is a good community, but they're, you know, they're on the older generation side. I did meet a few good Irish lads when I was out there. And man, it's like good to hear a familiar voice, like, now and then.
But there's something that happens, I think, you were saying, when you talk to somebody from your home country while you're in that foreign country, especially if they're living there, because I suppose you meet someone over there, they don't know you're Irish, You speak to them, and they sound a bit American if they've been there for a while, and then...
Oh, well, see, they'll start bringing out more of their accent when you're talking with them, but you go up to them, and they'd be chatting within a group, and, you know, they'd be saying a few American words, and then when they meet you, they're just back into full mode of home, like.
Yeah, and I think I do the same. I think even on this podcast, if we listen back, that when we refer to America, like now, I bet I sound a lot more American, and I get lost in within this.
I think you bring a little bit of the yank out,
I've got a little Donegal Derry twang that's, you know, brewing for 13 years here, and I think that comes through. But the second I meet someone at a gig, even, that's American, you know, so I'm like, oh my god, hi, where are you guys from? And I'm like, I don't even talk like that anymore. What am I?
What I find kind of interesting is, like, so, like, I'm working in the UK, like, and, like, it's only a stone throw away, but nobody understands me at all. Right? Yeah. So, like, I work in a laboratory, and there's, like, literally every...
I'm not sure if many people on the podcast understand the accent, especially, say, Irish Joes. That must blow their mind, you know.
I'll do my best to go slow, but that's basically what happens in the UK. I have to talk really slow, or they won't understand me, and I have to think about what I say. I have to, like, you know, I can't use my slang words, like I or no, like as every yes or no would be a very basic
belter,
you know, basic examples, things like that. But then going back to what Mr. Black was saying, like about like people going to America. So what I find is sometimes when people go to America or another country, they pick up the accent. They might not be there particularly long.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
But they'll start getting the accent going. And
some push for it, don't they? I can tell Americans that come into a bar and they're here 2.5 weeks and I'm going like, are you guys visiting? And they're going, aye. And you're like, all right. You know, you pick that up.
Do you know what, though? I think that's kind of nice. Like, it's cool, they're trying. Like, they're trying hard. Like,
they're trying to get down.
And I appreciate it. Like,
they're trying to get down with the culture. I like that.
Trying to get into the lingo.
But it's different whenever, like, for me, it's my natural accent starting to fade a little. And some, like, people tell me on the channel, someone was on that was Irish with me. And they thought he was American and I was Irish. No, it was in the line. Yeah, they thought Keelan McClafferty was American because he played an American person in the line and I was Irish.
Yeah.
It's like a role reversal. I was doing an American accent. That was crazy to me, you know. That felt really weird. Ian, did you have any bother in Philadelphia with people understanding you?
Now and then, but I tend to slow my accent down when I'm over there too, so... And I use words. I use their words when I'm trying to explain. Because when you're working over there, it's hard to...
Of course,
them to understand you. You don't want to keep repeating yourself, especially if you're in the bar and it's busy and it's working. Like, you got to be like, you know, throw that in the trash, like I'm saying.
Yeah, you can't say bin. Of course, 100%.
Rubbish there, you know.
Yeah.
The rubbish of the bin, like, it's a trash can.
Basically, the slang term for a cigarette's a fag. If I'm in the pub with my mates, like, you know, let's go out for a fag, you know. So I'm this fresh Irish boy. I've just got off the boat, as they say. Well, like, you know, off the plane, but off the boat's the term, like, you know. And I go into the corner store and I'm like, can I get 20 fags there, please? And the man's like, what the fuck are you looking for, 20 fags?
Yeah, of course, because, yeah, well, that's what I mean. So you can't go to America and be like, you know where I can find some fags? It's not going to work.
Don't be in a derogatory way. It was just like a culture clash. It was like, you know, like,
oh, that's not derogative at all. Yeah. I mean, that's just cultural. You say fags, and fag never meant what it was turned into. I mean, it was like a bundle of sticks.
I was like, no, I'm looking for 20 cigarettes. And he's like, oh, you want cigarettes? And I'm like, yeah. I was like, we
but here they're fags, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's going what you for call fag, them. Like, you know,
it's just not the same at all.
It's not the same at all. It's not at all. It's funny how like one word can like make a complete misunderstanding.
Well, Mrs. B always, when I started learning Latvian, Mrs. B's language is main language is Latvian. It was really unique, and it made me understand a bit more why they don't sort of get rap and stuff and a lot of English things, because they don't have a lot of words that mean two or three different meanings.
Yeah.
They don't have one and blue and blue and win and they don't have that two and two there and there. They don't have much of that. So when they're listening to rap and a guy is saying something with one way, they hear it the one way. They can't associate that with another word.
One definition.
Because their vocabulary is much broader. It's much bigger than ours. So language and conversation in general is very... It's very odd, and, you know, misinterpretations, you know, and stuff like that. And they can cause huge, huge problems. I mean, look at the Trump and leader of North Korea's fucking battle misinterpreted.
I'm going to make a statement now, right? This is like another interesting like interpretation, right? So like, I think it locks, like someone's defined, it's a 4-letter word. It begins with C. And it's defined as one of the last words in the English language that has the power to stun. And the word's cunt, right?
It has the power to what?
Stun.
Stun, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it depends where you are, because it's contextual. Like, so if you're in Ireland, like you could go to your best mate and be like, he's a mad cunt and I love him. You know, and like that's context. Like, I really like.
Yeah, I mean, we must have called each other cunts on here in these podcasts several times.
Yeah. And also, like,
and probably inherited that from listening to things like the Ricky Gervais show, where you hear it in that playful manner. Yeah, it's like, no longer
British Ireland, definitely, and also Australia is a big word in Australia. As in, like,
even the Australian guy had the song. You can't say cunt in Canada. Remember that?
Exactly. Kevin Bloody Wilson, I think his name was. Like, for example, this is one of the things I learned. Like, I accidentally dropped the C-bomb in America once. And a girl hit me in the face. Like,
no.
And I wasn't, like, I wasn't saying anything offensive. Like, I can't remember what exactly I said there. But basically, the point of the matter is that I used the C-word. And, like...
We're giving her a see you next Tuesday.
But like the point of my was, I used the same word, and she hit me. She's like, "I can't believe you used that word." And I was just like, I didn't realize I'd done wrong, because it's just like context, you know. Like in the UK, Ireland, you know, as I said, like you call someone a silly
cunt, not an insult.
Like,
he's
a great cunt, you know.
Yeah,
It's positive. Sound it's cunt, positive. Hey. Yeah. It's positive. Like
we talked about the history.
Or it can be negative as well. Like it's like, I think that's what makes the language so interesting, and it's just a slang word as well. Like even though it means like literally like female genitalia, like that's directly what it translates as.
Yeah. But that's probably about the only informative part of this podcast we've ever done, is the part where we actually went into that a little bit.
We explained the word concept.
Have you ever dropped the C-bomb in America?
I've learned not to call girls cunts, like, do you know what I mean?
In America?
They don't take it well. It's just not worth the bother. Like, just cut it out.
It's not the same as here, is it? No, just get rid of it.
For me, I didn't directly use it directed towards them. It was just I used the word and they were
That's the thing about America, is you don't have to call
everything's
someone a
taken
cunt.
So literally
just say the word.
The offense, like, it was just like literally once I said the word, and I was like, I'm not calling you a cunt.
The Bloody Basement Podcast
by Mr. Black Pasta.
Also, a hilarious Americanism is the fact that, for all you American listeners out there, we're just going to clarify this issue right now, right? So, in Ireland, a fanny is a vagina.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in America, fanny is a bum, or a butt, or an arse, as we like to call it. So, basically, whenever you're traveling to Ireland, remember that the fanny means the front and not the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's solid advice.
And you know what I hate as well?
That is solid advice, though.
I've picked up arsehole now. I've picked up that slang word now. And that people don't use that in the States. So, like, if I call someone an arsehole, and, like, even on the channel or something, maybe someone's being a dick or something, like, fuck off, you arsehole. It's like, I mean it, like, the way you mean it, because I feel it like that. But Americans, they'll see that, and it's so funny to them. It's like I'm a fucking cartoon, you know, because they're like, we say the arsehole for you're American. I'm like, don't, you know what I mean?
Fuck, I feel like arsehole's got much more sentiment than asshole. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's got like a bit more oomph in it. Like,
yeah, it's got a bit of grit there, doesn't it, with the R?
Like, you arsehole. Like,
yeah, yeah. Ian, what if any sweets in America did you like? Some candy, I should say. Sweets. There's another word I can't.
I try not dive into the sweets too much, but.
Oh, tell me you love some Jolly Ranchers. Come on.
Aye, Jolly Ranchers are nice, man.
Oh, the best.
Like, chocolate. You got your Reese's, like, peanut butter and chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good dude, mixture. I'm going to say, like, Jolly Ranchers are phenomenal. No, like, I've had them before, right?
I think that was via me, wasn't it?
It was you, but I had them before that as well.
Let me guess, New York.
No, it wasn't. It was someone brought them back.
I've got another story that I want us to talk about. First, I'll ask you, Ian, you ever had any experiences on Donegal poaching?
Donegal poaching, I've tried it. I don't think I've had an experience on it, but I've definitely...
How would you describe it?
Shots.
So, you know, describe it for Matt, for people in the United States.
As far as drinks go, even like whiskey lovers and like liquor lovers, people who appreciate, you know, the flavors, it's beautiful. Like,
it is nice, isn't it? Yeah, totally.
It's homemade. And it has quite the kick to it, so.
But there's this, you know, it's quite a high alcoholic percentage. What is it? At least 93%?
No, I think I'm going to take over here for a second, right?
Oh, so, yeah, Dave will know his drinks.
Basically, for your American listeners, you guys know a drink called moonshine, right?
Yeah. Okay. Do you ever have that?
Yeah. So,
really? I haven't.
Yeah. So moonshine and poaching, right? So poaching is the Irish equivalent of moonshine. And it's been argued as well that the Scottish and Irish immigrants to America brought the technology over to America to make moonshine. So basically, it's like the people who knew the methodologies of distillery and stuff like that, Scottish and Irish people.
It's the offspring of
obviously. Poaching. So they went over to America and started making their own brews from various grains.
So, moonshine, better name though. So basically, throw that out there.
Basically,
a little bit.
Poaching is like poaching's an illegal spirit. It's produced. It's typically produced in the mountains.
Potatoes, is that correct?
Or? It depends on the variety, right? So it can be potatoes, which is much like Polish and Eastern European vodkas. Potatoes can be used, but mostly wheat and rye is I think the traditional recipe, as far as I understand.
I've tried heather poaching before. It was
But
basically, it's illegally
cranberry and raspberry infused before.
It's an illegally produced alcohol in Ireland, right? And the reason it's illegal is because the taxman can't make a money off it, and it's been produced for hundreds of years. But like typically, a bottle of poaching can be anywhere between 70% to 90% alcohol, and it's not.
It's kind of. I mean, wait, hold up. I mean, that's.
70% to 90% alcohol.
That's Jim Clear leagues, isn't it? I mean, that's up in that sort of range, isn't it?
Yeah, Everclear, like, yeah.
Everclear,
like,
sorry.
What do you have in the US, like,
fuck.
At least industry standard, like. So, basically, it's completely legal, but, like, as I said...
Oh, is it just illegal to sell?
I have that. It's illegal to sell and produce, but... Right.
Not illegal to have them.
You'd be chased out of the
house. Well, we can, you know, as I said, people can come into possession of bottles of poaching. You know, you have to know the right people. You know,
are you boxing, Ian? Ian's boxing on the mic here. He's pumped now. You got fueled off them pizzas,
but
you get old like us and you eat and you just want to die.
As a public as a public health and safety announcement, there's two main methods of testing how safe your poaching is. Right. So the first, basically. Poaching is an illegal distilled alcohol, but the main thing you have to know is the alcohol that we consume to make us drunk is called ethanol.
Yeah.
And the alcohol that makes you blind is called methanol, okay? So whenever you do a distillation run,
And the first batch that runs off is generally in a high methanol content.
Oh, right, really? So, I didn't know that.
So methanol is an optic nerve poison, and that's what causes you to go blind if you drink too much methanol. So
that's where this thing comes
from. Blind drunk. That's where the saying comes from. Okay?
And that's where the poaching gets that sort of bad rep from.
Yeah, but...
It's like the staffy of alcohol.
Yeah, but if you're a reputable poaching maker, you'll run off that stuff quite you know, quickly, and then you start bottling the good stuff. But basically, you are a person, you've been presented a bottle of poaching, and you want to quality control your bottle of poaching. What do you do?
Play it on fire.
Okay, exactly, Ian. Thank you very much. Okay, so if you light the bottle of poaching on fire, Ian, what color of fire would you expect to see?
Blue.
And if it is blue, that means that your alcohol has a very high content of ethanol. And that means you will not go blind, right?
Fuck me.
Okay, so if your flame is red, that means that your bottle has a high content of methanol, which is optic nerve poison, the one that makes you blind.
So you could basically pour a shot, light it on fire, and have a look, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I'm sure, like, all of you guys...
If it lights really quickly, there's a high alcohol content in it. That's
a good way to test it. But I'm sure you guys have, lit a flame in Sambuca shot before, and you know, it burns a little blue flame, looks like your gas hob.
Totally.
So, like, the reason it burns blue is because it's a high ethanol content, and it burns blue. But if it is methanol, it will burn red.
Fuck,
and
me.
That means do not drink it.
We're actually having a podcast where... We're educating people. This is fucking good. I'm glad. Because the rest of the podcast have been about, like, poo-poo humor.
Safety.
Do you want to have some poo-poo humor? No, we'll have some poaching humor. Fuck poo-poo humor. Right?
Okay, we're talking about Public Safety poaching. Act number 2.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, we're not done yet.
All right, we got another one. Lesson number 2.
So, the flame test is a really good test.
Okay.
But the next test is called the shake test, right? So, traditionally...
The shite test?
Shake test.
Shake.
Like, shake it, you know.
I've been here too long off, if I'm hearing shake is shite.
Tay-tay, like, you know?
Yeah.
Shake it off. So, basically, what you want to do is... So, classically in America... your moonshine comes in a big jar, you know, a mason jar with like the lovely cover at the top. So if you shake the bottle really hard and the bubbles dissipate really, really, really quickly, it means there's a very high alcohol content.
Okay.
If the bubbles dissipate very slowly, it means that there's less of a high alcohol content.
Which means indicates methanol, yeah?
Yeah, well it could still be methanol, but by a combination of the two tests, so I would do the shake first. See if it's high alcohol, and then do the burn test then. If it's blue, drink it down, you're good to go.
Yeah, of course, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah, cool. Well, I can say, for one, that I've also had poaching. Did you have a lot of poaching, Ian?
A mate of mine put moonshine, when we were in Florida, in a strimmer. And she started up. A strimmer.
A fucking...
A weed whacker.
A weed whacker. A weed eater, they would say. Maybe weed whacker someplace.
She started right up.
Wow. So Gamer, the movie, was right, was it?
Yeah. You can run a car in booze.
Aye. That's what the moonshiners used to do when they run out of gas. Throw a wee bit of moonshine in the tank.
Shit.
Or you could actually transport the moonshine in the tank and then drain it.
I'm not a beer baron, man. I don't know.
I remember the first time I drank poaching. And I would be probably correct in saying, David, that you remember the first time I drank poaching. Let's call this segment Training with Poaching.
right.
So, David's at work. I finished a gig, I think. David's at work. He's like, are we training tomorrow? We'd been training. We were doing some work in a gym, sort of in a room in my house. We've been training, doing really well with that. And David's like, are we training tomorrow? And I was like, yes, definitely. Give me a shout, right? And I was like, cool. So, my neighbor's having a party up the stairs, and I've got a bottle of poaching. And I'm like, right, okay, well, let me go try this stuff. Maybe hang out with them for a bit, then I'll go to bed.
This is your first time?
My first time. So I go up and I'm drinking straight poaching by the shot. I've got a guitar and I'm playing, and everything was great. Everything's fine. No problems there. Everything's good. We're playing music. We're listening. We're having a smoke, that kind of stuff. And I just remember going, right, okay, I need to get to bed. And I looked, I grabbed my bottle of poaching. I remember looking at it. It was in like an old wine bottle. You know.
It's
like,
never in a bottle.
It's not. You don't get this in the shop.
It's usually in a wine bottle. Yeah.
You got to know some people that know some people that bribe some people. So I look at it in this old wine bottle, and I realize that there's only you know, half a finger length left of a full wine bottle of Pachin.
And then you realize you've messed up then.
Like. No, I had no clue, right? Mm. I take the bottle, I walk downstairs, and I go to bed. That's really the last thing I remember. But the second that I closed my eyes, David texts me.
I lined up for training.
Or rings me. No, he rings me. The second I close my eyes, David rings me, right? I couldn't find my phone for ages, right? I'm still drunk on Pachin. I'm obviously, you know, I couldn't find my phone. Finally, I find it. I look at it. It's David. I answer it. He's like, are we training today? It's David, right? Are we training today? I'm like, yeah, man. Yeah, of course. And he's like, right, okay, man. I'll be up soon. And I'm like, right, okay. I hang up. Dude, and I look at the phone. It's 7 o'clock, right? And I'm like, what? Was David working that late that it's 7 now in the beach house and now he's coming to train? Because I know we were going to train at 7, right? And I just closed my eyes. I'm like, there's no way he's training at 7 a.m. And then he lands up. And I think it was you convinced me that it was 7 p.m. and I had a gig that night in the bar downstairs. I'm still wanged off a fucking...
I remembered, I landed a racing bike to your house. And I brought it up the stairs and parked it outside your door.
No, I don't remember that.
I know you don't remember it, but like you actually did have a gig, like, and like it was like, but you know the best part of the whole story?
Very little.
We went and beat that bag.
Oh man, we trained. No, I said I was like,
we trained.
David was. I remember David saying like, we don't have to. And I was like, no, fuck that. I think I put on Eminem, was rapping to it for a little while. I was like, fuck that, we're going to train. And we trained, and I did my gig, and it was a great gig.
You did a great gig. I think the training session might have helped you sweat it out a bit. Like.
I think it did, yeah, definitely.
But the beauty of it was, though...
But I was like, still drunk after the gig.
Just for the listeners, like, you have to understand what JB's... what Mr. Black's training room was like. It's like he had a projector, right?
That's right, with Ollie.
We had a punch bag... We had like all these different like gym equipment and like literally a sound system and like literally he had made this mixtape of like all the sound matches.
Oh yeah, it was DMX, it was Eminem, and then it was like there's Ali films
with the
sound
bites of like Ali and like I mean you walk into like it's a tiny room,
pumped.
But by Jesus, we did some training
and we were
there.
We were above a hairdresser's.
Oh, we were rocking it! Like,
oh my
we
god,
were rocking it! I mean, like. Boom.
So that was my first experience with Donegal Pachin.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another experience I had with Donegal Pachin, right? And this involved one of my favorite musical artists, and I will not say their name. I won't do that because they had good reason for their actions at the time, but this is really funny. So this is my musical hero. I go to see this person in a venue in Ireland, and I bring them up a gift pack, and the gift pack has Elixir Strings. I was sponsored by Elixir Strings at the time, so I had a free Elixir Strings and Elixir strap that was sent over to give this person a small bottle of 20-year-old Donegal Pachin cranberry lime and mint infused, 20 years old.
Ooh, that's fantastic.
Right, small bottle of it, like about like that.
Cranberry mint infused.
Cranberry mint and lime. So on a, and I had this in the bag, and I had a copy of my album that I produced. And basically looking to try and get supporting this person. So I meet the person backstage, right? And the person is steaming. This is my musical idol, like, steaming.
Hammers.
I go up to the, great gig though, but they had a go at the sound man whenever they were performing. Like, it was pretty embarrassing at the time, but there was other things going on that we didn't know as an audience. I'm sure it just, the person looked a bit unprofessional, but probably there was more than we saw, you know?
Yeah.
But when I went back to meet the person, they were fucking rode off, right? The blinding gig, but rode off. So I hand the person this pack that's got all this stuff in it, right? And I'm going, this is a good gift pack.
This is
a like
great
this.
Idea, like.
The person opens the gift. I'm standing there. The owner's taking me back because I play in this establishment as well. So the owner's taking me backstage to meet the person, right? And the person's, how's it going? And I was like, I'm Justin Black. I actually sent you a message a few years ago about supporting you sometime. He's like, the person's like, I know you. I remember you. And I'm like, I'm thinking, sweet, brilliant. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm glad. And they're like, yeah, I remember you. You're good. And I was like, thanks. They look at me and they go, oh no, hold on, that's Paul Black. Right? This is the first, wait, hold up, oh, it gets worse. Fuck, it's shattered, like, heart's fucking crumbling inside, like, shit, burn, right? Oh, I've got, well, yeah. I've got my album in this gift bag in this person's hand. So, the person goes, what do you got there? And I was like, I have a look. Start naming off the stuff that's there. This person pulls out everything one by one, and they get the strap out, and they go, oh, this is great, I'll use this tomorrow at my show. I'm like, brilliant. A set of strings, thank you very much. Oh, bro, it's steaming still, like, you know, but thanks. Not making a lot of eye contact, but I busy and had a rough night, so I understood. Yeah. I was like, there's something else in there. The person looks at me and goes, is it weed? And I go, no, I wish it was. And before I could say I wish it was, this person's kid, who was like 9, is standing next to me. And this person's kid roars in my face, well, why not? What? And storms off. I'm blown away, like, right? And the person that was holding the bag is still holding the bag and rummaging through. And I'm like, oh, no, there's one other thing in there. And the person pulls out the patching. Now, my album's still in the bag, right? Pulls out the patching, goes, what's this? And I was like, this is 20-year-old. And while I'm saying this, the person's looking at the bottle, right? And looking at me. Like this, right? Looking back and forth at me in the bottle and the eyes. And he's going,
this is good.
What's this? That's 20-year-old. And as I'm describing it, that's 20-year-old Donegal Potchin. Cranberry, lime, and mint infused. This person's shaking their head, unscrewing the bottle, and tipping it to their lips before I finish that sentence. And gulping it down.
Oh, God. Oh, right? God.
And they stop when it's about a quarter left in the bottle and, like, and hands me the bottle and goes, you want some? And I was like, nah. And they were like, oh. And, like, shrugged it off. Like, oh, well. And this person empties this fucking...
Good night.
Fucking amazing patching in front of me. Like that guy should be dead. Oh, I mean... Oh no, this guy could take it. I found it odd, but there was more to the story. That's why I won't name the person's name, because there was more to the story and they were going through some tough situations, and I totally understand. And we've all had our nights. I had a night about 2 years ago where I came off the stage at a show because some guys were hurtling sort of racist joke at me for an hour, and I got tired of it and I grabbed a music stand and jumped over a bar. So we all have our breaking point.
Do you want, every man has his price, every man has his limit.
Yeah, and there's only so much you can take too. So I understood, but I always thought that was a funny patching story. And after that, I just left the person and said, no, it's all right.
To be honest, like, Mr. Black, like, all I can say is, you know what?
I still support the person as well. Amazing music, unreal.
Imagine the hangover that man had the next day after doing that.
Well, I won't say whether it was a man or a woman, but...
but, like, that person, we'll just say, sorry, that person...
Yeah.
The next day, the hangover, they would have felt like death. If they necked that the way you're saying it is, and it was 20-year-old brewing, and, like, oh, my God.
I was just gutted, because I was finishing that sentence as he was... Because I was finishing that sentence as... They were tipping it back, and I was going, what? No way. 20 years, and you're going to do it like that? Just, there was no. And then when I left, I was like, well, I'll let you. Exactly. That's the point. No.
I just put it to head. Like,
no.
It's not meant to be drunk like that. It's meant to be.
No, that's what I thought too. I felt a bit disheartened. And that's probably maybe why I don't want to meet many of my heroes, you know? But I don't think they put me off.
No.
Because... there was another story to it, and I was like, fuck, yeah, Jesus.
That's fair enough.
You know, yeah. I can understand. So, that patching is a hell of a drug.
Fuck, you know.
Well, I've got a question for you, Dave. How close are we to cloning, say, body parts?
Okay, so this is honestly an interesting question. Like, so, like, I'm a stem cell research scientist, as I've said earlier in the podcast, but basically we're getting closer. So the way we're at the minute is a thing called organoids. So, like, we're building organs that are, like, similar to organs, but not quite as complex. So basically what I do is...
And what, can those buy you time?
Not yet, nah.
Okay, but is that the intended sort of goal?
But you have to understand how big this field is, right? So, like, one of the fields, for example, is, like, I'm taking, like, you know, like, pig hearts, decellularizing them, and planting human cells into them. So you use the scaffold that's left over from the pig heart, plant it with human cells, grow them, culture them, and then try to get like a heart going.
Okay.
And then
is that a complicated like how long what kind of time frame is
it's
that?
It's incredibly complicated. It could be months, like, but like the point of the matter is, if you can generate a heart, like,
wow,
who gives a fuck? Like,
what do you think? Would you have anything to do with sort of like synthetic blood, stuff like that, or do you?
So personally, myself, like, I wouldn't have anything to do with synthetic blood, but I'm kind of like in the region of the technology that would be involved for doing that.
Oh, cool. Dave,
will we ever be able to live forever? That is my question.
Hmm.
Okay, so
will that ever happen?
So
in others' hearts, I think is the.
So I think this is like one of the basic arguments about that is so like inside your cells you have this structure called a telomere. Okay.
Hmm.
So every time your cell divides, any cell in your body, your telomeres get shorter and shorter and shorter.
So every time mitosis occurs,
yeah,
your cell, what did you get shorter?
The structure inside is called a telomere. Okay,
okay.
Right? So the telomere, every time it divides, the telomere gets shorter and shorter and shorter until it finally reaches this limit, which is called the Hayflick limit, which is the limit that how many cells can produce for a given, you know.
Really?
Okay. So basically every cell has a limit of how many times it can reproduce. And then once that limit's achieved, the cell dies, right?
Unless you have HeLa cells.
Yeah. But anyways, okay, so HeLa cells is a different thing. We'll get back to that in a minute.
You know what I'm talking about then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, the type of cells that I produce in my research are called induced pluripotent stem cells, right? So we use a virus to trick your skin or blood cells to go back to the very beginning and become an embryonic stem cell, okay? So when you talk about synthetic blood, theoretically, it is possible, right? Where I take this, so basically I take a skin cell, I put a virus into it. This virus has the instructions inside it to trick the cell to become an embryonic stem cell. So it goes back down the timeline to the very beginning.
Fuck.
And now I'm a cell that can become any type of tissue in the body, okay?
Okay.
So you've got the cell. So for example, you can turn that into a blood stem cell, right? So you turn it into a blood stem cell that can become all the types of blood cells in the body. So then you've got synthetic blood, right?
So, right. Wow.
Right. Okay. They're working on this, right? This is like, I'm just saying hypothetically, this is possible at the minute, but
is DNA the holdup or?
Like, see, this is the thing, right? If you make those cells from someone who is, who's O negative, they're the universal donor. And if you can make synthetic blood from someone who is a universal donor,
then you've blood for everybody.
You stop blood, you know, like vampires would be happy.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's just True Blood type of stuff, isn't it? Yeah. Very good,
like,
yeah.
It's a good analogy, the show True Blood. Like, if someone developed the True Blood, like, it would solve like
a lot of problems yeah.
Right. In the world.
I mean, obviously, achieve transfusions for blood cancer, everything.
What I'm saying to you is like, so you have to understand where blood's made from. Like, so blood is made from your bone marrow. So, like, to make blood, you would probably have to make like a bone marrow
synthetic
type
bone
type marrow, even, you know, rig that would pump out the blood, and then you harvest it. But like, this is like, there are people actively working on this at the minute, because if you can make synthetic blood, but it actually wouldn't be technically synthetic, like, because if it's made from stem cells from people that actually are people who are O negative or whatever.
Yeah, so how do you get the rights to those people?
Yeah, you know, that's the other thing, right? So this is like, this is where,
and these people who want to be a part, I would want to be a part of something like that.
Yeah, but you definitely. See, this is the thing too, Mr. Black, like, where you mentioned HeLa cells earlier. You've obviously read about HeLa cells.
Oh, brilliant! Yeah, so seen like, documentary as well. I think definitely read about it though.
The thing about the HeLa cells is like, for the listeners, like, it's basically they're like cancer cells that a patient had, like, basically in the 50s or 60s, as far as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, most of modern scientific cellular research has been carried out with these cells. The first, what's called the immortalized cell line, like, so like those cells never
aged, isn't it?
As in, like, you can keep them going indefinitely, and so much research has been carried out with it. But basically, it increased our understanding of cancer, of so many different diseases. But
This was almost a... But the would thing you call this a positive cancer, or...?
It is a positive thing, like, but, like, the way it was sourced was not ethical.
No, of course not.
So, like, that's why the family sued.
The people, rightfully so.
The people that made... They had to sue them, like, and they're dead right. Like, but the point of the matter is, like, now, if you want to take part in a clinical trial or any kind of medical study, you have to sign all kinds of disclaimers to, like, you know... Give your voluntary consent.
I would sign them today. If I had died tomorrow, my body is more than welcome to be used for anything. We see every part of it.
The thing is, you see the thing as well.
Cut my fingernails and let them be cremated.
Mr. Black, I've done a degree in human anatomy, right? And like, I have worked with people who donated their bodies to science. So like, as someone who's done that, I feel like whenever I pass away, I will do the exact same. Mm-hmm.
I've always said it.
Because I've done it, and like the thing is, you see, what you have to understand to train the next generation of doctors and researchers or whatever, like a textbook can only take you so far.
Of course, yeah.
But like, if someone donates their body, it is like a massive gift to the cause, like, yeah. And like, it's not like
not an easy thing to obtain.
To let people know, like, it's not like if you donate your body to a university, it's not gonna. Benefit pharmaceutical companies, you're going to teach someone who could be the next brain of tomorrow mm-hmm. where the aorta is and where the whatever is, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you like I can tell you from experience, like, as in it's so much more, like, you learn so much more, and like, but I want to make a point as well that that we're very respectful towards the people who make their donations.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, like whenever I was studying or a group would we put a memorial service together for the people
that
donated their bodies for our education,
mm-hmm.
and we'd invite their families. And just to let you know that, like, we were never alerted what body belonged to what family or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's not the point. The point of the matter is, like, we put the service together, mm-hmm. and they would the family would come, and what we would find is after we've had our, like, you know, talk with family and show them what we do and what the outcomes are, they would be very happy and how, like, of we course. Respect it.
And it's that person's wishes as well, so
exactly, you know. But also, like, we would have a couple more sign-ups every year,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's an important thing, like, because, like, you know,
it's a good way to advertise
the doctors of tomorrow, like, you know, people like that, they need that experience, like, with human anatomy, need the gross anatomy, like, it's really important.
Totally. Well, it's amazing what you're doing. I could sit and chat with you all night about it, but we need to wrap it up soon, I think, and get you guys back to good old Bunkrana before you leave the country again. Ian, I've got a question. You used to do really amazing swimming. Right. Unreal.
Yeah. Brilliant.
But you're away from that now. You're trying to find a new path, and you were telling me something about maybe getting into fitness instructing or something along the lines of that. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, yeah. I have the background in it, so it's
definitely
background in me.
You obviously know what you're doing in the gym. I've actually been trained in the gym with you years mm-hmm. ago, and you knew what you were doing then too.
Yeah, you know? So it's just like in my blood, man, just been swimming all my life. And
what would you do? Would you think you would do something like IGTV, Instagram TV, or would you do YouTube or Twitch or something? I don't know. Or would you go try something different? Would you want to open your own gym? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you got to start somewhere. So I'd start off with a personal training route and take it from there. You want to gather up a good client basis and create your brand if you want to go for a gym. You know, you got to get yourself set mm-hmm. up in a certain way, you know.
Yeah,
you got to go about it. Like, you know, so everyone starts somewhere.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Definitely. And if that doesn't work, there's definitely a role waiting for you in Superman, I think. So you could definitely do that. What's your Instagram so we can get you some followers over? Maybe you can start from there and start training a few people. Maybe you inspire me to want to go to the gym. So maybe you can teach somebody else to be healthy from there that way. I'll follow you for sure. So what Instagram should we look up?
Yeah, look me up on IA Gainsner. So it's IAGAINZNOR. Yeah, I gained. I think that's how it's spelled.
We'll include a link in the description.
In there, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, are you going to show us some things on Instagram that we can do at home or something like that?
Oh, man, my Instagram right now is mostly just my life stuff. I don't really dive into too many specifics about training or anything. There's a couple of pictures of me and show how much I like to train up there. I like to see how my body changes, on a monthly basis or in a couple of months on different foods I eat and different ways I train. Yeah.
There's a bit of a nutritional aspect to what you do as well. You enjoy that kind of stuff. Yeah,
you can't really get the results you want unless you do the nutrition and the training.
Yeah.
Totally. 100%. Yeah. Well, you're both looking well and made me feel much fatter but motivated. So thank you for that. Thanks for eating my pizza and saying it was good. It wasn't really good. It was just all right.
It was amazing.
It was okay. It's great to see you guys again. Hopefully it's not half a decade again and I have to bring you on and record you to get you to be here.
No, I'll be sitter. Don't worry.
It's great. I'm going to play a bit of music to play us out. My name's Mr. Black. This is David Kelly from Oxford University.
Uh-huh.
Ian Gaynor.
Thanks of for just listening, folks.
Champions United. That's what we're going to call your gym when you get it up and running.
Kind.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for
Mr. Black.
Been a pleasure. Well, this has been episode 6 of the Bloody Basement podcast, Swimming in Science. And playing us out is an Irish band by the name of Our Native State. You've heard a few other tracks of theirs on the podcast in the past couple episodes, but this is a song that I really like by Our Native State. It's called Loaded Dice. Thanks for taking the time to listen, and God knows what we're going to do next week. But come join us anyway, as we make a fool of ourselves on the Bloody Basement podcast. On behalf of myself, David, and Ian, we'll see you next time.
Every day sees the same old thing. You can't a winner if you don't have spring. Just hold on, play along. It ain't easy just to say goodbye. Say I'll change and I really try. There's no romance in a fighting chance. Seems I'm always gonna let you down. My head is always going round and round. Gotta get my feet back on the ground. When you bet your life on a loaded dice, that's what you get when you bet your life on a loaded dice. Not much has changed since I was young. Just the battle and the damage done and the wasted time. My biggest crime. Lately the mirror shows a different face. And I don't know if I can keep this pace as the penny drops. The music stops. Seems I'm always gonna let you down. My head is always going round and round. Gotta get my feet back on the ground. When you bet your life on loaded dice, that's what you get when you bet your life on loaded dice. Seems I'm always gonna let you down. My head is always going round and round. Gotta get my feet back on the ground. When you bet your life on a loaded dice, that's what you get when you bet your life on a loaded dice. What you get when you bet your life on a loaded dice.
Mr. Black Pastas.